No one trains us how to be married, and yet we don't realize we're training children how to be married. Our children are watching us. Marriage is one of those things, probably the key thing God has put us into to teach us about relationship, and our children are watching.
You're listening to Parenting on Purpose with Dr. Bob and Rosemary Barnes from Sheridan House Family Ministries. I'm your host, Ruthie J., and we've covered a lot so far this week. The example that your marriage is to your children, how to handle the self-esteem of your spouse because you have power. And then yesterday, covering finding the combination, if you will, of the lock of your spouse's heart and how to make that happen. So if you missed any of those programs, you can hear them again at parentingonpurpose.org.
Well, yesterday, as you said, Ruthie, we talked about opening that combination lock in our spouse's heart. And we talked a lot about how, generally speaking, it's a woman. And we've talked about how God has wired her for nurturing and for relationship. Sometimes it's not, but whoever the person is who is more engaged and more understanding of the whole relationship process should be the one to really begin to orchestrate and figure out, how do I engage this person that is not as into this relationship as I am? And I think one of the key things, you know, I feel like we talk about this so much when it comes to the family dynamics, that we really don't take the time. And you mentioned earlier in the week how we just give up and throw up our hands and say, I've tried. And I'm just tired of it. This is the way it's going to be. I'm going to settle, as you've said, Bob. And I think it's paramount that the person who is more engaged in the relationship process needs to come up with a plan. How can I do this? How can I get us to turn off the television and turn off all of our texting and iPads and all the things that we're involved in, social networking, and plan out, how can we do this in the most effective way, considering my personality, his personality, or vice versa, to really make it happen so that we can learn about each other.
And everybody wants to win in their marriage. You know, nobody wants to be in a bad marriage.
Right.
So how can you make it, if you're going to be the one to instigate that plan, make it so it's a win-win almost?
Again, I think we don't expect to have to work so hard. It was a, quote, very romantic courtship or engagement, and we don't expect to have to work hard. And then we marry and we settle into the mundane of life, and it's not as much fun for some reason anymore, and it still should be fun. But we didn't expect the relationship person didn't expect the non-relationship person to be a relational cripple. I mean, imagine that all of a sudden your spouse is in an accident and you're involved in the rehab and you're going to be pushing your spouse and helping your spouse and pushing the wheelchair or doing whatever it is to help them get past it. And you have no problems doing that. You love this person, you're going to do it. There probably are moments that you're sad or probably moments that you feel lonely, but you're doing it. It's the same relationally. And coming to the understanding that I've married someone who doesn't understand relationship, which is so typical. It's almost this interesting attraction of two people. I'm attracted to her. I was attracted to her not only because she's physically beautiful, but I was attracted to her because she understood relationship. There are always ladies at our house. I don't know why, but there are always ladies. There are never men at my house. the only time there were ever men at my house is two summers ago. I was redoing the deck in our backyard, and guys heard that I was using power tools, and it scared everybody on the planet.
So they showed up. See what
literally
in the neighborhood.
Pickup trucks were showing up, and were helping me do this. We had so much fun. We were laughing, but we had a project. Our project wasn't relationship, although it was. Guys were asking me, when you do the second half of the deck, will you call me? I want to be there for that. It was so much fun. It was an excuse to have relationship. Rosemary's a relationship person, so it was very different for her. We as husbands, I think, and this is real important, we need to understand if this is the way it's set up in your marriage. If your wife is relationship oriented, then I need to look at the kinds of love my wife needs and attempt because she's very, very different. Rosemary, you have a word picture that I've heard you use in women's seminars.
I went to, this is really going to sound like a chick flick for sure, Ruthie, but I was at a women's conference and I was sitting in the back of the room and I was watching all these women come in to attend, then sit down, listen to the speaker. For just a split moment, I had this picture of all these women. They were like a rose.
Rosebud,
thank you. And some of them.
I'm here to help.
Thank you.
Because I'm trying to be a relationship person.
You.
I'm here to
help. You're just helping my self-esteem so much.
Good.
Anyway, so some of them looked, just by their facial expressions and the way they carried themselves, some of them, it was like they were wilted. You know, and then some of them look like they had never, they were just, you've seen those roses that never open up. They're just kind of in the shape of a rose and they're getting darker and darker in the color and everything. And they just never opened up. And then there are some women coming in and they just were fresh and the petals were opened up. And it was just this image I had suddenly of how that's us as women, this cherished idea that we've been talking about all week, that the purpose is for her to open up and be this vibrant, beautiful, fragrant, by the way, flower. And her husband is so pivotal in that process. Some of them came in and they were looked crushed and stomped on. And some, again, had not been opened up. So I think that's such a neat picture of how a husband so has the flower of her life in his hands. Did I say it right?
Yeah, it's great. We've had the privilege of doing a marriage seminar in an extremely, unbelievably wealthy community, one of the wealthiest in America. And watching people of extreme wealth come to this and be involved in this, and it wasn't any different. They're still dead. They still had dead
same
eyes. They were cosmetically great, still dead in their eyes. And I think a lot of people think, if I had more stuff, if I had more bling, if I had more, I would be happy. And they
had enough money to have cosmetic surgery.
Yes,
or, what do you
or
think
whatever.
Of that?
Which is such such an insult to God to begin with. But if I'm fearfully and wonderfully made, I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. But end of the day there, it's he, the man in her life, holds so much of her self-esteem. And we read some time ago about these aspects of the love. And obviously, this will shock no one. It's so much more complicated for her. And so I just want to spend a little time talking about the aspects of love that a woman needs. So did you want to jump in here being a woman and help us with that?
Well, the first one is companionship love. And I think that that's sort of a friendship kind of a thing. I think that every couple, a wife in particular, needs to feel like this is my best friend. I can really share my life with him. We can have wonderful activities together, whatever that might look like, that we just enjoy each other's company, that we have relationship here again. It's that companionship, friendship love.
And that took work.
Yeah,
and
you have
that.
To navigate it too, even as a woman, because if you're a talker woman, you probably married a very non-talker, which you say, honey, can we just hang out? Which to him means, can you just listen to me for 3 hours? And you exhaust him, and you have to navigate those waters.
Yeah.
I've been through those waters, and I can drive my husband crazy talking to him. But then I start
to notice. Well, he actually called and asked us to record this right here.
Please tell her to stop talking.
Yes.
She talks enough for a career. But you know, I've had to learn also to be quiet so that at least you keep that companionship, or else you're just driving away.
Very good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, the first one is in the five aspects of a love that a woman pursues. The first one is companionship love. The next one is compassionate love. Mm-hmm. And is he compassionate towards her needs, you know, and what she's dealing with and the pain, some of the pains in her life, or is he just brush it off?
Mm-hmm.
For instance, for Rosemary to say, you know, when that happened, that hurt my feelings. And to have a brisk response, and it would never be like this, but it would come out sounding like, well, just deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big deal. Just deal with it. And it's not just companionship. It's a next level of compassionate love.
I want you to understand me. You may not understand me, but if you at least listen and hear me and help me process, that's it. We want somebody to help us process what we're feeling.
And care.
Care.
Care that I'm hurt.
Yes.
Oh, boy, we're going south. Real quick on this one.
Let's keep moving.
Yeah, you know, this was a difficult one for me. My mom died. It was a dad and all boys, and there wasn't a lot of, did I hurt your feelings going on in that? And when I would say something that she would interpret as rather abrupt, I didn't mean it to be abrupt, and so it's not my fault. I didn't mean it to be abrupt. You heard it abrupt. And, you know, I would have to learn it is my fault. I need to be learning this person. We do this with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know so-and-so is a sensitive person, so I'll handle it differently than one of the guys at the office. He just, you know, spit it out. Tell me what you're thinking. There's a compassionate love that's necessary.
And communication 101 is that the meaning of what is said is important from the one that's receiving it.
Yes.
Right.
And it's not what you said, it's how it was interpreted that's important. Right. So if it was misunderstood, it's your responsibility to clear it up. Right, no, I didn't mean it that way. Let's clear it. Let me apologize for how it really came out.
We know
and
that.
This is how I heard it. This is how it came across to me when you said it that way. Is that what you really meant?
And that's a reality.
Yeah.
Whether I meant it that way, the way she heard it is a reality.
Right,
yes.
Right.
Letter C is romantic love. Mm. She's like, oh boy. She's already humming over here.
Well, that's that, again, the rose picture, that he is so aware of her needs and her wanting to have this special connect with him that it just helps her to blossom into being the woman she needs to
be. But don't you, romantically, in marriage, aren't there just waves of it? Like, you go through years that are better than others, and then, I mean, you guys have been married longer. Does it get better over time? What's realistic? Because what we see in movies is one thing, and then sometimes we'll just turn off and say, well, that's the movies. Reality is different. I just have to cope and deal with it.
I want to hear what you say first, and then I'm going to
answer. You've put me in a no-win situation here. I think romantic love, if we see it as waves, if we don't work at it, you've heard me say when I got my first mobile phone and Rosemary says, you know, you can call me when you get in the car, and me saying, okay, what would we talk about? And learning to do that because it was important to her and it was romantic to her because it kept the relationship going all day till I got home rather than catching up. And learning that I actually, over a period of time, did it and enjoyed doing it, stopping by to get the flowers. And learning from her that it wasn't necessarily getting the roses at Fresh Market. It was that you pulled into the parking lot and you got out and you went in with nothing else but to get those roses.
And spent money on something that seems like a complete waste to
and
you.
I am
so romantic.
Yes, and I'm somewhat frugal, and so I'm going to get these, and they're going to die in 5 days. Here's an idea: plastic roses that will never die.
Boy.
Yeah, it didn't work. Doesn't work.
Because you tried it.
So it was what was romantic to her. It was something I had to discover and pursue it.
I think, and you asked a very good question, very practical question, Ruthie, is it something that comes in waves? Or I think that there certainly are seasons, but it does not have to ever leave the relationship, I don't think. I think there are going to be seasons of pain. There are going to be seasons of difficulty. One of our most trying times, I think, was early ministry for you, and I was a young mom. And I was exhausted all the time. I was getting up for nighttime feedings, and I didn't want Bob to have to help me with it because I know he had to go to the office first thing in the morning. And so I was exhausted all the time. I felt unattractive. I still hadn't lost my baby weight and all those kinds of things. And so there were a lot of dynamics that were at play at that particular. That was a season that was more difficult. And so then we had to be even more engaged in making it happen. How can we make it still be romantic? A lot of it has to do with that compassionate love that we talked about a minute ago. But how can we make it happen at this stage? Realistically, this is what it looks like. Mm-hmm. How can we do it at this stage?
Yeah. It's, again, and we've said it every time we've been in this booth on this week, we have to decide to hear the other person's heart. And it's not coming out in words. We've got to choose to, you know, she just had a baby. How do we do something that's romantic now when she doesn't feel like a romantic person? Mm-hmm. Another one is affectionate love, companionship love, compassionate love, romantic love, affectionate love. Mm-hmm. And I'll take this on for a little bit, especially because we're running out of time. But I had to learn there was a separation between affectionate love and passionate love. I really thought affectionate love was the precursor and that they stand. Look at you both laughing at me like I'm an idiot. So we're going to move on from affectionate love. But I had to learn that. I mean, I'm affectionate with my children and hug my children and kiss my children. And I had to learn that in the marriage also.
And I think a real key, and I know we're almost out of time, but a key with affectionate love is verbalization, that you like me, not just desire me, which is wonderful, and that's passionate love, but that you like me and that you appreciate me. And I think there's a lot of verbal going on. The
precious without performance, as you've said several times. And then obviously the fifth is passionate love, but they all kind of build on each other, where they don't for the man. All of these build on each other. So it's very important for me to come to an understanding of her. She's different and it's okay. And I think it's also important for me to know it's different and not inferior. It's just different. And I need to learn about it. And I'm going to end on that because that started down a really bad road for the male. We have to decide to get to know our spouses.
You've been listening to Parenting on Purpose with Dr. Bob and Rosemary Barnes from Sheridan House Family Ministries. I'm your host, Ruthie J. And if you want to hear any of the programs we've done so far on this topic this week, you can hear them again at parentingonpurpose.org. Lots of ways to get the program and share and comment and question about it too. And lots of resources to help your marriage online too. All the proceeds help the children's homes online at shfm.org. It's short for Sheridan House Family Ministries. We hope you join us tomorrow as we wrap up this topic of the reason for romance in your marriage on Parenting on Purpose.